There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesmandel. I'm your host on today's program, bringing competition to the broadband marketplace. My guest for the entire show is Peter Folk with Volo Wireless Broadband. And to talk a little bit about what it's like to be a small competitor in a pool full of really big fishes, and what might the future for broadband in your home be. Should be an interesting show. You do want to stay tuned. Well, Peter, thank you for joining me today to talk a little bit about this. Maybe we could start out by telling us more about your company, about Volo, and what it is you do.
Okay, well, we started Volo about 5 years ago in Urbana, and we are a wireless broadband internet service provider, so that means it's high-speed internet, but it's delivered to your home over a radio signal instead of being through your telephone lines or being through a coax cable that your TV signal was originally coming through. It's not a satellite service, which is another way that some people get internet. We have towers around town, and your signal bounces through our towers and then ends up at your house, basically.
And a lot of people are familiar with wireless internet. I think they kind of associate it with what they get at a cafe or somewhere like that. Is that what you're doing?
No, that's – so if you think about it, that's from the jack on your wall to the inside of the room. That's about how you connect your computer to your home network. Whereas the DSL or the cable internet is about how the internet gets to your home. We do that part. We do from your home to the internet or from your business to the internet. We have about half and half residential and business customers.
So how do you make that work? I mean, because normally when people think of wireless internet, they think of a signal that goes like 100, 200 feet. You're obviously talking about miles.
Sure, yeah. Well, we have a fairly large number of towers around town. And each of those towers is transmitting a signal, and then on your roof or somewhere high up on your building normally, we'll put a directional antenna with an enclosed dedicated computer basically to hook into the signal that comes from that tower.
So to someone who might have your service, it looks a little bit like satellite TV, you know, if you have like Dish Network or DSL, Dish Network or DirecTV, you put a dish on your roof. But in this case, instead of pointing at a satellite, it points roughly towards a tower where you guys run.
Correct. So there's a couple differences, but you can clearly see from satellite. One is that the physical size of the antenna is different. Normally, you'll see a dish with satellite. Ours is a rectangular antenna, and it's quite a bit smaller than a dish. Also, a dish is going to be pointing at the sky, and ours is going to be pointing roughly at the horizon. So there's a couple of little differences there. But from the user's standpoint, while our service is very similar to DSL and cable in terms of the way you can use it and its performance, satellite service is very different. Simply because of the distance between the Earth and the orbit of these satellites, there's a pretty long delay between when you, for example, press your return key and when something starts loading on your computer. And cable and DSL and our kind of wireless are all pretty similar in that regard, whereas satellite has a bit of a wait.
So are you working off of microwave frequencies?
Yeah, we use mostly the what's known as unlicensed spectrum in the 2.4 and 5.8 gigahertz frequencies.
Now, a lot of other devices use those frequencies. Do you experience interference from them? I know, like cordless phones and other
sure.
wireless devices.
Even microwave ovens give off some radiation in that frequency. But with the directional antennas that we have, it doesn't really impact us very much. Occasionally, we'll have a problem that we have to work around, and that's sort of a reality of the medium. But for the most part, it's not a big deal.
And so why did you start this business? I mean, why did you decide that you would get into being a broadband internet provider using a very different paradigm than Comcast does or AT&T does?
Well, it started really from a grassroots, unsatisfied customer kind of direction. When I got involved in wireless, we were doing the hotspot business that you mentioned earlier, where we set up Espresso Royale in Urbana with wireless internet there. And that was back in either 1999 or something like 1999, which put us pretty early in that product cycle. So we learned over the course of a couple years that really the people aren't going to want to pay when they sit down with their laptop and get their coffee. They're going to want to have that for free, and the cafe is going to provide that for free. So that wasn't such a good business to be in. But at that time in Champaign-Urbana, there were no high-speed internet providers. We were working with, those of you who are old geeks will remember, Soltech, and they provided us with what's known as a dry pair, so basically a simple set of copper wires between us and them that we ran early DSL over, and it cost us an arm and a leg, something like $250 or $500 a month for speeds that today would really not be acceptable for anybody. And that's what really got me thinking about it. I wanted to buy high-speed internet. I couldn't buy it from anyone, even though the technology existed in all sorts of different forms around the nation. And it didn't look like the big companies were really caring that most people could not get broadband. And so we took our wireless systems, and because we'd worked with them so extensively, we knew a lot about their capabilities, and we sort of turned them around. And instead of going from the jack to the inside of the building, we instead went from the jack to the internet.
And decided to do it wirelessly rather than trying to get into some other wired?
Correct. Well, as is pretty clear, it's hard to get into the wired arena. It's extremely expensive. You have to run huge numbers of wires, and that's a lot of copper. That's a lot of man hours to do a very relatively simple thing.
And a lot of capital investment.
Right. It's also very hard from a regulatory standpoint. There are lots of laws that protect the incumbent carriers, and they were enacted supposedly for our benefit so that we can be sure that the carriers are going to do the right things. But in the end, it means that it's very rare that you'll have more than one incumbent phone provider, which means any more than one company that's actually running wires in a given town. So you'll have one company that's running phone wires, one company that's running cable, coaxial cables, and another company that's running power wires. And there are a couple places where there's more than one cable company, but very few that there's more than one competitive phone provider. And so we couldn't really get into that market. If we tried to get into that market, we would simply be reselling the services that AT&T or inside at that time, it was actually Time Warner, that they provide. And they didn't want to provide the services we wanted to sell. So we were sort of stuck. And that's where wireless came in. It's an unregulated use of this wireless technology. So we didn't have to ask anybody. We didn't have to worry. Well, we have to worry about obeying the laws, of course, but the laws are in favor of competition in this regard.
So from your standpoint, it was a very low barrier to entry.
Indeed.
To get in and start offering wireless internet this way. What is the advantages, or what have been the advantages to people who subscribe to such a service as opposed to subscribing to DSL or subscribing to a cable modem?
Well, it really boils down to the fact that we are a comparatively small local business. When you have a question about something, you're not going to have to go through the entire bureaucracy, And we started it with an eye on providing services that we wanted to buy, things that were not available from the existing providers. And we still do that to a large extent. There's a lot of services that it's very hard for you to get from the main providers. Simple things like static IPs that have gotten harder and harder to get. Now, even if you pay Insight, I haven't figured out a way to get an actual static IP that doesn't change. You get what's known as a sticky IP.
And so what you mean by static IP is that your computer has an internet address,
right,
that stays the same all the time.
Right.
So if you want to run certain services, maybe even run your own server for any number of things in your house, you may really want that number to stay fixed all the time, whereas it gets renewed and changed on a regular basis with most servers.
Just like having a phone number. We would all be very annoyed if our phone number kept changing every time we, you know, turned our phone off and turned it back on. That's the same way it is with most internet service providers. You would still be able to call other people, but they wouldn't know how to dial you. It's exactly the same, and the analogy is almost identical.
And so that's something that you can offer because you're running your own infrastructure.
Right. We don't have to worry. Well, we've looked at the cost-benefit analysis of doing that, and there's no cost and lots of benefit, so we do it.
But obviously, there must be some disincentive for the large operators to offering such a thing.
Yeah, I don't want to speak for them, so I don't know exactly their motivation. I haven't found a good one other than that it must be something they feel they can make money from by having people buy those extra services, and then you go through a couple cycles of that. So you start out saying, well, if we charge for static IPs, we can make more money. And then, so they don't make static IPs standard. They instead make them an added service. And then they find out that not very many people buy them. Mm-hmm. And then they say, well, why should we even sell them? And so pretty soon you can't even buy them.
So if I'm an average household, and so static IP doesn't hold much value for it, I don't even understand what it is, and I don't appear to be doing anything that requires such a thing, what would be an advantage to this sort of wireless service from a small provider like Volo have over DSL?
Sure. Well, the static IP is really it's a typical example of the kind of thing that we can do that other people don't do for whatever reason. We're able to respond more reactively to more quickly to people's desires. And if you have something that we don't offer and you ask us for it, we'll put on our thinking caps and figure out if we can. So that's what more geeky people would be interested in. The less geeky people would be interested in things about Volo, like that we cover areas that other people don't. Simply, it just like DSL covers certain areas that cable doesn't, and cable covers certain areas that DSL doesn't, wireless covers areas that neither of those other two cover, and we don't cover some areas that they do cover. So we have a footprint that's different, and so that's good for some people.
So you mean there are areas in, say, Champaign-Urbana or in the surrounding area that can't get access to a cable modem or DSL easily?
Yeah, mostly outside of the traditional city limits, the coverage is really spotty. And there are actually quite a few places that can't get DSL even within the city limits.
Right, because there's a distance issue with how far away you are from the office.
Right, and there's a cost-benefit analysis issue with whether you extend that distance.
So I'm talking to Peter Folk here on Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical analysis of the mainstream. And he is with Volo Wireless Broadband Internet here in Champaign-Urbana, a small company offering wireless internet directly to homes and businesses, and a competitor to the two big broadband providers here in Champaign-Urbana, AT&T and Insight Communications. Insight soon to become Comcast Communications, so it'll look a lot like the broadband market in a lot of cities across the country. You can check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net, and you can get the radio show at Radio.MediaGeek.net, where you can download the programs if you missed them or you want to catch them again. You can also subscribe to the podcast to get an MP3 to download to your computer or your MP3 player. We also have it in Ogg Vorbis if you don't want to play games with all those messy patents. If you got any comments, send them to me, paul@mediageek.net. Now, are there other companies around the country who are doing a similar sort of wireless broadband thing like you are?
Well, the general class of companies that we're part of is known as a WISP, a wireless internet service provider. And there are thousands of WISPs around the country. However, most of them are providing a different service than we're providing. Most of them are trying to serve rural areas that don't have other access, which means they end up figuring out that they can make the most money and do the most internet by providing relatively slow speeds at relatively high prices. And that ends up meaning that they're pretty small and they're not a real challenge to the big players in metropolitan areas. They will, when a cable internet or a DSL comes into a market, they will pretty much lose their customers in that market. We're different than that because we expected that trend would continue, that DSL would continue to expand its reach and cable internet would continue to expand. So we targeted our service at the same performance metrics that the metropolitan area internet access services provide.
So you're trying to provide a similar level of service to DSL and cable modem.
Correct. There are undoubtedly other WISPs that are trying to do that. I don't know of any of them, though.
And now, Champaign-Urbana, for the folks who are listening on the podcast or other stations, it's a metropolitan area, but it's about 100, over, a little over 100,000 people in the cities, and then we have a surrounding area population getting up close to 200,000 people.
Right.
So a small metropolitan area. Are there other competing ISPs besides the big two, AT&T and Insight/Comcast, that you're aware of?
For most residences and businesses, no. There are companies that serve multi-tenant buildings here, like the dorms and the apartment complexes in campus town area mostly, but they don't really go out of those markets.
So primarily your competition are the two big players?
Yeah.
What's it like? I mean, being a relatively small player going up to these really large giants. I mean, AT&T being the largest phone company, telecommunications company in the United States.
Well, it's great, frankly. It's fantastic. It makes you get up in the morning and think that you're battling Goliath and winning a lot of the time. It boils down to because of the nature of wireless, we're able to deploy our infrastructure in a very targeted manner, so that even though we have, you know, probably three or four orders of magnitude less money to spend on a given project, we're able to do it at about the same performance level because we don't have to, for example, run a wire 6 miles to connect someone who's 6 miles away. We really just put the endpoints in and we're able to do the same kind of service. That means, though, that we have to upgrade a lot more, and so we're constantly tweaking our infrastructure and finding new ways to connect our cells or pockets of coverage.
Now, of course, ideally, you would like to see a pretty high penetration in a given area to allow you to make the best use of your infrastructure. Do you find that you're having to build out your infrastructure, but serve a few households or a few customers?
Our infrastructure is designed with that in mind. It's designed with the idea that initially we will cover a large area sparsely, and hopefully as our service becomes more and more popular, we'll get more and more dense coverage in small areas. And it's really pretty much worked out exactly as we had planned it. You never grow quite as fast as you want to, but our infrastructure is holding up to almost exactly the demand we expected, so we're upgrading it at about the rate we expected to.
And the internet that you get, I mean, you have to get your primary internet from somewhere. How do you acquire that?
We buy that from one of the two big phone companies in town, which is McLeod, the other being AT&T. Mm-hmm. And we buy that from them really because they, until recently, they had a lot of local presence. There was a person that I had known who worked there for many years, and he did a lot of great things for the network here in town, really making it a special network and providing all sorts of services that they don't really provide anywhere else in the country. Well, they provide them in one other town in the country. Now, we didn't end up using any of those services. We really ended up just buying sort of off the shelf, relatively off the shelf broadband from them. But the fact that they were open to doing interesting things made them enjoyable to work with in that regard.
And do you find at all that there are challenges? I mean, is AT&T aware of you? Are you finding that they even take note and see you as competition, see you as a threat, or do you find that you're able to sort of work around the margins, so to speak?
Well, I don't know how to interpret their actions, really. It may be that they just don't see us, but I know that at least the people who work for AT&T know who we are. In fact, we occasionally get referred people by AT&T representatives who know that we cover an area that they don't cover, and I guess they'd rather the people go to us than go to future Comcast Insight. A lot of people have very conspiratorial theories about the phone companies, but I don't share them. I don't see that in my day-to-day operations. I find them to be strong competitors. It's great that they seem to look for the big markets and they try to serve those markets as well as they can. But I don't see them doing anti-competitive things to kick us while we're down, as it were, or anything like that.
And let's talk a little bit about the regulatory environment, which you sort of made mention to before. You're offering wireless in an unregulated part of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And you did so you wouldn't have to try and deal with rights of way and having to get a franchise and things like that, which are required to put out a wired service like cable and to some extent with DSL. Are there other regulatory restrictions that you have to work around or deal with as an ISP that doesn't work conventionally?
So there are lots of little laws that we have to abide by, just like everyone else does. For example, we still have to drive the speed limit. I find that really, that's really unfair. I think that people who are traveling, internet information travels at the speed of light, so we ought to be able to, too. No, there are lots of little laws like radio power restrictions, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. But none of those are really hard to manage. They're just things you keep in mind and abide by. It's like the speed limit. It's not, you know, nobody's life is ruined or made super great because of the speed limit. It's just one of these things that we have to abide by so that everybody gets along.
And you and I appeared on a panel last fall and had a pretty good spirited debate, mm-hmm. about network neutrality. And you had a lot of questions about network neutrality.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and you know, and for those, and I don't know, who don't know what network neutrality is the concept of establishing some regulatory control over the internet, ostensibly to guarantee that all people who pay for access have equal access, mostly to content. So that if AT&T is your provider, you can get YouTube videos in addition to being able to get content offered by AT&T that not service not be degraded. You're an ISP, so in ostensibly net neutrality laws, should they become enacted, would apply to you.
Yeah, they would to some extent restrict what we're able to do. Now, that conversation boiled down to a bunch of people disagreeing on the best way to get about the same result, and we might have had a different. We might have actually been disagreeing on fundamental issues if we'd had someone from AT&T there or, mm-hmm. something like that. But even they, in my experience, in their practical actions, don't want to do the kinds of things that we all think would be bad for the internet. Things like preventing users from accessing certain sites because that company is a competitor of a company that paid AT&T a lot of money. Those are very nasty little anti-competitive things. And as I said before, I just haven't seen any evidence that they want to do anti-competitive things. There are definitely examples of freak occurrences where they do things, or someone at a local level does something that they think will be good, and it's not. It's a bad idea. And usually somebody hears about it and it gets corrected. That's been my experience with dealing with them, and it's my experience personally. I don't know anybody who goes out every day to provide evil for the world. Most of the people I know are just trying to do a good job at what they're doing, and when you're providing internet, that means providing fast internet for your customers. And if your customers find that you're preventing them from accessing things that they want to access, they're not going to enjoy that.
And so then if the law would just, though, enshrine something you want to do in the first place, why would that...
There would be no problem, right. The problem is that it seems very hard to me to codify exactly what should be allowed and what should not be allowed. It's along the lines of the campaign finance issues. It's very hard to make a law that prevents people from doing all of the bad things. It's very easy to make a law that stops one person from doing one specific thing. And sure, that's great, but then we end up with a law book that's 700 feet thick.
and that would be thin by United States standards.
I guess so. And that means, so the repercussion of a 700-foot thick law book on internet service provision is that no small provider would be able to compete because we wouldn't be able to afford the lawyers to read the book. So if it becomes a extremely heavily regulated environment, we lose a lot of flexibility that we as a small provider have now. Now, maybe it would provide a restriction on a big provider. I don't think it would. In my experience, when someone who's big and powerful wants to do something, they can usually find a way to do it, even if it was written into a law to prevent it. So my question is not whether it's good to provide fair access to resources on the internet. It's, is there a way for non-technical lawmakers to end up passing a bill that accurately makes that happen?
And if I were your customer and I felt that I was getting unfair provision, I guess I could probably talk to you.
You could talk to me. So in the Volo case, it's very easy to get an answer to, are you restricting this site that I'm going to? And the answer is easy, no, because we don't have the time to be watching every site you go to. Well, that's a trivial reason, of course. There are lots of other good reasons for not restricting what you go to.
Because it might be more expensive for you to do that than to just provide...
Good internet. Yeah.
There's all sorts of things there. Oh, wait, we're running out of time here. So maybe you can tell us how someone could learn more about Volo Internet if they were interested.
Of course. Volo.net is our website.
And if someone's outside of this area and it sort of piqued their interest in obtaining wireless or other internet service that's not from one of the big providers, how might they do that?
Well, most wireless ISPs have an ad in the phone book. So in your local phone book, check under internet service providers. The challenge will be finding which ones actually service your particular location. If you don't know your internet service provider options already, probably you're in an underserved area and it'll be a challenge to find them. There are websites like DSL reports that provide sort of user reviews of internet service providers, and they have a lot of listings that let you look up, you know, for your zip code and that kind of thing. There's a wireless internet service provider association, the WISPA. It's probably wispa.org, but I don't know it off the top of my head. So Google WISPA if you're interested in that kind of thing.
Peter, thank you very much for hanging out with me and talking with me about Volo Wireless Internet.
My pleasure, Paul.
That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with another half-hour look at independent and grassroots media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. In the meantime, check out the frequently updated Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. The program can also be downloaded at Radio.MediaGeek.net, where you can subscribe to the podcast. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and is heard on 10 other community stations around North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, WYQZ in Warrenton-Bealeton, Virginia, KWMD Kasilov in Anchorage, Alaska, WVEW in Brattleboro, Vermont, and Free Radio Olympia
Media in Olympia, Washington. It's also on the web at Free Radio San Diego, Pirate969.org, and RadioDriftless.org. Media Geek is free to air on your local non-commercial station, too. Just email Paul at MediaGeek.net. That's also where you can send comments about the program, Paul at MediaGeek.net. Thanks for tuning in.